You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for What's Up with the Leader of the Opposition, Chris Hipkins.
Morena. Chris, how's it going?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. Now, obviously, the big news from the past few weeks is the hikoi that arrived at Parliament with upwards of 42,000 people taking to the streets to protest against the Treaty Principles Bill. Many, of course, expressing the belief that the government is undermining Māori rights. How do you view the bill, and what does it say about the current government's approach to engaging with Māori communities?
Oh, I agree with the overwhelming evidence that's been presented to the government already that the bill's taking the country backwards by over 100 years. We should actually be focused on bringing the country together, not creating a huge division. Now, let's be clear, David Seymour knows exactly what he's doing. You know, he's out to get more votes. He doesn't really care if he drives a huge, big division right through the middle of the country in order to do that. He's more interested in his own self-interest than he is in the best interest of the country.
Now, Prime Minister Christopher Luxon chose not to attend the hikoi or engage with the protesters. What message do you believe this sends to the tens of thousands of people that were in attendance in Māori?
Well, it's hardly a surprise. I mean, Christopher Luxon doesn't like to listen. He tends to think that conversations involve him doing all the talking and everybody else listening to him. He doesn't like answering questions either. Ultimately, I think, you know, this government is a government that doesn't listen. It's a government that's only in it for a very narrow range of New Zealanders. If you're not a millionaire, they don't want to know you.
Yeah, I mean, despite the opposition and the public outcry at the hikoi, the National Party remains determined to push the Treaty Principles Bill through Parliament. Do you believe that this is a necessary or the correct course of action?
No, it's the wrong debate to have. If we want to talk about what the future of the treaty is, you know, what does the treaty mean to New Zealand's future? Sure, I think there's a lot of people who'd be keen for that debate, including a lot of Māori who'd be keen for that debate. We're trying to basically extinguish it through a bill in Parliament, which is what David Seymour's bill would actually do. I think it's just such a massive step backwards.
Now, I mean, there's been various commentary around Luxon and how he's managed the coalition. Some people suggesting that he's been weak in managing coalition negotiations, particularly with ACT over the Treaty Principles Bill. What do you make of his handling of coalition negotiations? Do you think this reflects a broader problem with the way he's managing the interests within his own party?
I said before the election that I thought that Winston Peters and David Seymour would run circles around Christopher Luxon, and nothing that's happened since then has convinced me that I was wrong. You know, I mean, ultimately, for two relatively small parties to exert such a huge amount of influence over this government, you've got to ask the question of why that is, and ultimately it comes back to lack of leadership by the Prime Minister. He's letting them get away with whatever they want.
Okay, now moving along to a recent report from the Education Review Office, which has suggested that NCA Level 1 may need to be overhauled. What do you make of this this call from the Education Review Office to potentially overhaul or scrap NCA Level 1?
Well, I mean, this is not new. There's a lot of people who've been calling for overhaul or scrapping of NCA Level 1 for a long time. When we were in government, we did do exactly that. We overhauled Level 1. We looked at whether it should be scrapped. The overwhelming feedback we got was that actually it's still important that you have a base level qualification for kids who won't go on to do Levels 2 and 3. So,
Can
you hear me?
Yeah, sorry, you just cut out there for a bit. We just dropped out, but I can hear now, Chris.
Okay, sure. Yeah, for some kids, Level 1's the only qualification that they're going to get. They're not going to get Levels 2 or 3. So it's important that you don't just take away the one qualification that they might actually get. And I think, the new Level 1 has only just been introduced. So I think it's a bit premature to be making big sweeping statements about the fact that it should be abolished.
The Education Review Office has highlighted inconsistencies between schools in the implementation of NCA Level 1. How can this be addressed?
There have been inconsistency between schools ever since NCA was introduced. And I think that is always an ongoing challenge with a qualification that has as much internal assessment as NCEA does and as much choice as the NCEA does. What we were trying to do as a government was get away from the kind of credit farming that's been going on. So Level 1 was designed to actually reduce the number of credits that are available at Level 1 so that the qualification is much more of a foundation-level qualification, that it is a bit more standardised, and that you know, some of the stuff that we've seen before where people are just picking and choosing which credits to do in order to you know, get to a certain number, that's not necessarily going to be in those kids' best long-term interests.
Hmm. There's also been comment that schools are opting to focus on NCEA Level 2 and 3, particularly in higher socioeconomic areas, and there's a concern that students who need Level 1 as a foundational qualification are being left behind. How do you respond to this concern?
Well, if you look at it, having three levels of NCEA makes us relatively unusual internationally. Most other education systems will typically have two levels of school leaver qualifications. We have three, and so for those schools who are dropping it, if they're confident they can get their kids to level two or level three or both, then I'm pretty relaxed about that. But the reason we kept level one was very, very clear feedback from schools that they still felt level one was required for some of those kids.
Mm. What do you think, just broadly speaking, would be the key changes that need to be made to the educational system in secondary school to benefit students?
I think we need to go back to the original intent of the NCEA review that was completed some years ago now. It was when I was first Minister of Education. We worked really hard to get a bipartisan consensus on what we wanted the NCEA to do. The late Nikki Kaye, who unfortunately we learned had passed away, we learned that yesterday, she and I worked very closely together to try and get something, an agreement on something that could be enduring. I think if they go back to that review, they'll find the blueprint there. And if they went back to that, I think they'd be on pretty good ground.
Yes. Okay. Now, moving along to a story that I covered with Deputy Mayor Desley Simpson yesterday about a sharp rise in demand for services provided out of the Auckland City Mission, some services being the demand for them increasing by 300%. It tells a story of a rise in people experiencing homelessness around Tamaki Makaurau. What is the plan to address the sharp rise in demand for these services and people experiencing homelessness?
Well, this government have taken a problem with emergency accommodation, booted everybody out of that and turned it into a homelessness crisis instead. You know, we worked really hard to put people into emergency accommodation while we built more houses, and we were building a record number of new state houses. This government have come in, they've booted everybody out of emergency accommodation, and they've stopped the house building program that we had. This is the consequence of that. You're going to end up with more people out on the streets. That's going to make our community less safe. It's going to mean more crime on the streets as people get more and more desperate. And ultimately, it didn't have to be that way. If they had continued the work we were doing to build more houses, then actually these people could have homes rather than sleeping bags and cardboard boxes.
Mm. Auckland Council stressed the importance of collaboration between local and central government. In what ways could the government support local councils and people experiencing homelessness?
Building more houses. You know, it's actually pretty simple. If you haven't got enough houses for people, you need to build more of them. And we built a record number of new state houses during our time in government. So one in six of the current state houses across the country that we have were built during the last 6 years that we were in government. Now, that shows that we were really starting to pump through the houses, and had we been still in government, that house building rate would be continuing to increase. Unfortunately, this government decided to cut $1.5 billion out of the house building and maintenance budget, and this is the result. You end up with more people without homes. Building more houses is the best thing that central government can do here.
Okay. Outside of building houses, what are some other long-term solutions to homelessness, and what initiatives would a future Labor government pursue?
Well, if you look at the partnership between organisations like the Auckland City Mission and our government, our previous government, that does show that you can have good housing solutions that also provide wraparound support for people who might have complex issues. They might have, you know, mental health problems, they might have drug or alcohol addiction, they might have a range of other things going on in their lives. You can provide that wraparound support if you partner with local grassroots community organisations to deliver it.
Okay. And the other story of the week is the government is looking to resume live animal exports. The government did promise public consultation on this issue of live animal exports, but has not done so. What do you believe this lack of consultation says about the current government's commitment to transparency?
Oh, look. Consultation is a completely pointless waste of time. They've already decided that they want to reintroduce live animal exports, and frankly, they don't care what other people think. But that's the overall attitude of this government. Once they've decided they want to do something, they don't really care what the New Zealand public thinks about it. They just do it anyway. Live animal exports are terrible for New Zealand's international reputation. They're terrible for animal welfare. They're actually taking the country backwards. I think they shouldn't do it.
I should say impartial on this one, but it seems very, unethical and harmful to both the animals and New Zealand's global reputation.
It's unethical, it's harmful, it hurts our reputation, it's not good for New Zealand's overall export markets, and actually it's a relatively small amount of money when you consider the size of our overall export market. I just think it's a stupid thing to do, frankly.
Minister for Animal Welfare, Andrew Hoggard, emphasised that, quote, specialist consultation has been taking place, but animal welfare groups like the SPCA have not been invited to participate. What's your stance on the government excluding organisations like the SPCA and in general animal welfare experts from this conversation?
Well, I think the fact that Andrew Hoggard is the Minister for Animal Welfare shows that the government aren't really that interested in animal welfare, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's probably all you need to know.
Yes, okay. Hey, Chris Hipkins, thank you so much for chatting to us this morning. We'll leave it there, mate, and we'll look forward to speaking in a couple of weeks' time.
Good as gold. Cheers, mate.
Bye.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.